The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
And the Kabbalah is not an independent teaching, it's actually the commentary of the Torah. It introduces us to the inner dimensions of the Torah. So the Kabbalah teaches us that there are 10 divine qualities. Now the divine, Hashem, is beyond any multiplicity. But in our understanding of God, as Hashem is manifest to us, there are 10 qualities. And we've been basically going through these qualities. Each quality is like a lens, like a pair of glasses. And when you look at reality through these glasses, you see a new world, and you see, you have a new relationship, a new encounter with Hashem. Okay, so we've talked about Malchus as organization and order. We've talked about Yesod as life. We've talked about Netzach and Hod as somewhat the world is like an army. Everything that's happening are maneuvers, right? And Hashem is somewhat like a commander. We talked about Tiferet, in that really it's the attribute of realness. Today, I want to explore two attributes which are really very common. The attribute of justice and the attribute of kindness. Okay? Gevura and Chesed. Gevura is translated as power. Is the power to control, and is the power to control others, it's the power to control yourself. It says in Perkei Avot, Mi HaGibor, who is truly strong, HaKovesh et Yitzro, one who captures themselves. Self-discipline. Okay? So what we see here is an attribute in the world, a divine attribute of strength, power, control, discipline. Gevura is associated with justice. Okay? There is law. There are consequences. When I look at the world through the glasses of Gevura, when I become sensitive to the quality of Gevura, what do I see? I see a world of borders, boundaries. I see a world that is calculated, measured, lawful, with rules. There are violations, there are consequences, there is reward, there is punishment. I see that in the world. That in this world there are violations, and there are borders, and one can violate those borders, one can break those borders. I have a sense that there are good things that happen, there are bad things that happen, and when a bad thing happens to me, I say, why me? And if you're one of those people that when you're walking down the street, and God forbid, you know, a bottle drops on your head, and you say, why me? You just had a Gevura experience. Right? You just had experience, you have a sense that there is some kind of structure of justice in the world. And this couldn't have happened for no reason. Why did I deserve this? What did I do to deserve this? So when a person looks through the world through the eyes of Gevura, they look at a world and they're expecting a world to be fair. Right? Because fair means that people are getting what they deserve. And if you're the type of person that gets really kind of like annoyed or upset when things are unfair, well, that's a good sign that you are very aware of the quality of justice. And you don't know why it's not being manifest in your world. But you are very aware that that quality is a real quality, because if it wasn't, it wouldn't upset you, right? You wouldn't get upset. You say, what do you mean? Well, it's not fair. Why would I expect anything to be fair? This world is an accident. There's no meaning to this world. Things happen haphazardly. There is no reward nor punishment. It has nothing to do with what anybody else does. Basically, what happens, happens, and that's it. It just depends where, you know, the dice falls. That wouldn't get you upset, right? But if you feel annoyed when things are unfair, or you feel really satisfied when things are fair, when you say, that's not just, well then what essentially you are wearing are the glasses of Gevura. It means that you expect to see in reality the quality of boundaries, borders, rules, violations, and consequences to behavior. You were out of bounds. Your behavior was out of bounds. A person who has no sense of gvura feels that nothing's out of bounds. But if you're the type of person, which most people are, who feel that certain behavioral patterns are out of bounds, then that means that you do have a sense of equality to reality, which you believe is real and you see in your life, called gvura, justice. Things should be deserved, and that's undeserving. Therefore, the name that one sees through the glasses of gvura, when I look at reality in the glasses of gvura, through the glasses of justice, then who is it that I see, so to speak? What's the name of reality? What's the name of Hashem? Elohim. When you see the name Elohim in the Torah, it means the God of justice. Okay? It means the God of justice. However, what's really remarkable is, why is it that the first place that we encounter the name Elohim is in the creation story? What does creation have to do with justice? But the entire creation story is the name Elohim. You do not see the name, the Yud, the Hey, the Vav, the Hey. You certainly don't see the name Adonai. You don't see any of these names in the creation story. The character, so to speak, that is being most manifest of divinity in creation is the name Elohim. Why? What does Elohim and creation and justice have to do with each other? Well, what essentially is creation? It's law and order. It's rules, it's regulations, it's borders, it's boundaries. In the beginning, God created heavens and earth. Earth was in a state of chaos. The rest of the story is God putting chaos into order, setting boundaries, setting borders. And therefore creativity, which in many ways is color separation, right? And where they meet, and knowing where colors should meet, that's essentially creation. Creation, according to Judaism, you don't have a creation unless there are borders and boundaries. Otherwise, everything falls apart and everything's in chaos. Creation is borders and boundaries, rules and regulations. You're out of bounds. This is out of bounds. This is your role. This is your role. This behavior fits. This behavior doesn't fit. That is justice. Okay? What's really fascinating is the Midrash says, the old tradition says, that everything was created according to its knowledge and consent. And the Midrash gives us a very bizarre account of creation, telling us that every single creature in the universe, creature not only meaning moving creatures, meaning trees and whatever, every single creature in the universe was brought to the supreme divine court, right? And was told, this is how big you're going to be, this is the form you're going to take, this is what your limbs are going to be, this is how you're going to eat. This is the kind of food you're going to eat. These are the beings that you will be subordinate to. And these are the beings that you will be dominant over. Do you accept? And every single creature said, I accept happily and wholeheartedly. They were warned that this is your role in the universe. Do you accept? And they said yes. Very strange Midrash. I mean, what am I? I mean, really? Do I imagine trees going up to heaven? I mean, it sounds like a cartoon, right? Well, it's important to understand that Midrash convey very deep secrets in this kind of riddle, this kind of riddle terminology. And you've got to kind of get inside and figure out, what's this saying? What's it really telling us about creation? Why is creation bound up with justice? Well, I gave one reason why creation is bound up with justice. One reason is because creation is borders and boundaries. And if there are no borders and boundaries, there's no creation. Everything melts into a homogenized chaos. So creation is borders and boundaries, and that has to be maintained. Otherwise, everything falls apart. And when a boundary is broken, there's a consequence that needs to happen in order to put things back into order. Fine, that's justice. Fine. But what does it have to do with each creature had to go to the Supreme Court and be warned that this is what we plan to create you as. Do you accept? Because what I believe this midrash is telling us is the quality of accountability. Now, I know accountability for some people is not a pleasant word. It's a very difficult thing for people to be accountable, for people to be liable. And accountability means these are your accounts. You better take care of them. Okay? And I want to know that you've taken care of them. Accountability and liability is a basic quality of creation, according to Judaism. If you're not accountable, it means you don't buy into justice. It means you don't accept that there are borders and boundaries, there's things that you do and there's things that you don't do. And unless you're in a world, unless you're ready to accept there are things that you do and there's things you don't do, and if you do the things that you don't do, that you shouldn't be doing, then there's consequences. Because it throws things off. It breaks borders. It's a violation of creation. Right? This is an absolutely critical understanding of Judaism. You know, people are not comfortable with the idea of reward and punishment. You know, they have this image, probably going back to childhood, where there's this God in heaven, and if I do something wrong, then God slaps me on my hand, and I get in trouble because I did something bad, which is simply not within the interests of God. God doesn't like that, and just like my parents don't like when I do things. Oh, it's no. It's much, much deeper than that. Justice means there are borders, there are boundaries, there are rights, there are wrongs. You have a role, you have a certain responsibility, you're accountable, you're liable. If you make a choice to violate a border, well then there are consequences, right? There are consequences. And if you want to call that punishment, fine, right? But if you think punishment means that it's not really in a synergistic way connected to what you did, in other words, if a person excessively drinks, comes up to the doctor, looks and says, you have a liver problem, fatal liver problem, and you say, I'm sorry, I apologize, please don't punish me. The doctor's saying, I don't intend to punish you, you've done well enough on your own, I don't need to punish you. Your behavior is its own punishment. Judaism teaches that our behavior is our own punishment, and our behavior is our own reward. Schar mitzvah, mitzvah. The reward of a mitzvah is the mitzvah. And the punishment of a transgression is the transgression. You have broken a boundary, you have broken a border, you have behaved in a way which is unreasonable, irresponsible, a lack of sensitivity for the accounts that you have been entrusted with. God took every creature and said, this is your job. If you don't want it, I won't create you. Because I can't expect you to be accountable unless you accept it. Right? You can't call me up and say, Rabbi, why is it that my bank account is in the red? You can't call me up unless I said, you know, I'm going to take care of your bank account. I'm going to watch your accounts. Unless I say, yes, this is my responsibility. Yes, I accept this as my job. I am accountable. You can't be accountable. What this midrash is telling us in a very important way, that every single creature in the universe is accountable. Every single creature is accountable. Because every single creature has a role. Every single creature has a boundary, a border. And what's even more important to understand for ourselves is before you walked into this world, whether you're conscious of it or not, you were handed a script. You were told, this is what you're going to look like. This is what you're going to eat. This is how much you're going to be making. These are the problems I'm expecting you to take upon yourself. And if you accept, fine. If you don't want the job, fine. Don't take the job. Don't be created. But if you want to live in a world of boundaries and borders, and you want to be a member of it, you have accountability. Yeah?
But if we're not conscious of it, how can we be held accountable for it?
Excellent question. If we're not conscious of it, how can we be accountable for it? The answer is that, in a certain way, you are conscious of it. Because most human beings are conscious of the fact that they have rights and wrongs, that there are certain borders within which they're in bounds and they're out of bounds. They might not know their particular mission. Fine if you haven't been informed what your particular mission is. Fine, but you are accountable in this world in the simple sense of being, you know, being honorable and being moral. And most people have that as an intuitive sense that that's what it is. In other words, it's like Kant said, what's amazing is that a person has an intuitive sense of ethics and morality. There's a certain inner moral imperative. Now, if a person doesn't have that, that's a long discussion, which is not really so important. It's important, but not important for what I'm trying to accomplish in this particular class. Very happy to respond to that after class. But right now, there's an amazing bracha, blessing, that we make when we see graves, right? And, you know, if you haven't seen graves of your people for more than 30 days, there's a blessing. And the blessing basically goes, blessed are you, God, who has created, right, all creatures with justice and judgment, who has supported all these creatures with justice and judgment. And it's all about justice and judgment. Justice and judgment is an absolute critical ingredient in the world we live in. How does this awareness affect us? If I wear the glasses of justice, then that means I become very aware of things that are fair and things that are unfair. It doesn't mean I'm going to always see justice being manifest, right? But I'm going to look at the world and I'm going to say, that's unfair and something has to be done about that, and that cannot be allowed to just fly, and somebody's got to get up and do something, right? When you wear the glasses of justice, you demand to see justice, and you're annoyed when you don't see justice. Okay, that's number one. How does it affect you? It affects you in a number of ways. It affects you in understanding that whatever happens in this world, there's a judge and there is judgment. Maybe I don't always see it, but I believe that everything that happens is just. And that's very hard, and it brings up some big questions, you know, that everything that has happened is just because there was judgment. It's a very interesting point. It says in Exodus, do not curse Elohim, which means don't curse judges, but also means don't curse God. Why would a person curse God? Because possibly something's going on in their life that they feel they really don't deserve, and they get really angry. Job was a prime example of a person who went through amazing, amazing challenges in his life. His wife turned to him and said, curse God and die. You know, that was her attitude. His attitude to her was, I will accept good from God and I won't accept bad from God. And so how can I can't complain. I mean, when good things happen, I say, why me? And I'm thankful. And I want to believe that what I'm getting is what I deserve. But when bad things happen, then I'm not willing to accept bad things. When a person understands that God is an Elohim, then they have the faith that God is a judge. Things are being put in order. And they understand that whatever they're getting is exactly what they need. And that's very hard for people. They go through very difficult times. And I'm not the one to say, oh, it's okay. And when you're going through it, don't cry and just be happy with it. It's certainly a challenge. Pardon? It means, in light of the choices that I've made, right, and the situation I'm in, what's happening is what's necessary to put things back into order. Whether I see that or not right now, that's what I try to do with it. I try to find meaning in what's going on. I don't try to figure out, why is this happening to me? Because you're not going to know why this is happening to you. You're going to drive yourself crazy, why is this happening to you? But what you can say is, now that this is happening to me, there must be meaning to this. What meaning can I bring to this? How can I turn this situation around and make it into a meaningful experience? A person who's not aware of or does not accept the quality of justice in the universe, well, then they'll simply say, this is completely unjust. There's absolutely no reason for this. This does not fit into any order, any pattern. And therefore, I'm just going to suffer. I'm just going to be bitter. I'm going to be angry. And that's all. Another person would look with the eyes of Gvura. They would accept that this is a harsh judgment. This is painful. But not judgment just to hurt me. But it's a judgment which is critical in order for me to get to where I need to get to, if I take the responsibility.
Like a terminal illness or someone who gets killed in like a
Well, why don't you ask people who've gone through it, and you'll find some amazing people who have found meaning in it. Doesn't mean they were happy that it happened. Found meaning in it. They took their tragedy and they turned it into a creative energy to help others, to build the world, to promote values, and they turned that around. Yeah, well, I really don't want to get into the discussion as much as I appreciate it. It's a very important discussion, but it's not going to be resolved. It's not going to be resolved by someone trying to give you some philosophical understanding of individual people's pain, right? So I'm just not going to pretend that I can give you this answer, right? Nobody can give you this answer. Even Moses asked God, why do the righteous suffer? Why do the evil seem to have complacence? He didn't get an answer. So I'm certainly not going to be able to give you an answer. But one thing Moses understood, that God's ways are just. And that's what it says in the Torah, that the ways of God are pure and God's ways are just. I don't see it all the time. It's hard for me. True. But when you wear the glasses of Gvura, rather than sit there and say, this is a haphazard, ridiculous world that has no meaning, the person who wears Gvura says, there's justice, there's judgment, there's meaning in what's happening to me. If I don't see the meaning, if I can't figure it out, that doesn't mean there isn't meaning to it, and I have to work at turning this around into a growthful experience. I know somebody who the worst of worst things happened to her just over and over, and after this, she became a religious Jew. So someone asked her, I mean, how is it after these tragedies happened to you that you have come to become a believer in God? And she said, because if there is no God, then all this is senseless, and I might as well just go insane. So something inside tells me there must be meaning to this. And there's, otherwise, why not just go insane and why not throw myself out the window right now? And that was the way she dealt with it. I'm not saying correct or not correct, but that's understandable that a person has a choice to either look at the painful situation and suffer and say there's no meaning, there is no design, there is no pattern, this doesn't fit into any rules or regulations, this is just simply meaningless, and I'm in a world which is a complete accident. If that makes you feel better, you know, with what's happened, fine. But it generally makes people feel worse. And the question is, why does it make people feel worse? Because inside themselves, they cannot accept this. Because something inside them says there must be justice. And what can I say? There must be a meaning to this. And the fact that I can't find the meaning in it, and I'm coming to think that there is no meaning in it, the fact that that bothers me, and that sets me into such a great state of pain, itself is an indication that I still believe in meaning. Otherwise, I wouldn't get upset about it. I just say, okay, the world's an accident, and I go on, I have a drink of beer, and I just swallow my pain. But that's not the way most people work. In addition, I know it's a difficult idea. The Torah teaches us that when something bad happens to us, we bless God. And we say, blessed are you who is a true judge. Judge meaning you have judged me and have determined that this is what I need. Again, yeah, it's important to try and break out of this paradigm. You have judged me and you slapped me, you know, and you should have just forgiven me, right? Well, Judaism says that God is very long-suffering, extremely patient, but person's behavior gets to a certain point or something happens, whatever, something happens in their life and it's tragic. And they acknowledge that it's tragic. But they say, blessed are you as a true judge. You've decided this is what has to happen in my life. And therefore, it's a great challenge, and I'm willing to accept the challenge. When something good happens in my life, I make another blessing. Blessed is he who is good and gives good. But the Talmud says something that is extremely, extremely difficult to accept. And yet, the Talmud says it, and I personally accept it, which is, in the future, in the world to come, we will look back at our lives. We will look at all the tragic events in our lives, all the tragic events in history, and we will make a new blessing. We will say, blessed are you, God, who is good and gives good. Does it make sense? How in the world will I look at the tragic, most harshest, most darkest moments in history, in my personal history, world history, and say, blessed are you that's good? You see, in the movie right now, we're inside the process. We don't have a bird's eye view. But imagine a fly walking across that picture. There would be times where he'd see darkness, darkness, darkness. Times that he would see brilliance, brilliance, brilliance. And from his point of view, there's darkness, there's brilliance, there's darkness, there's brilliance. But if that fly all of a sudden flies off the page and gets a whole picture, he all of a sudden realizes that the picture is beautiful, and the dark moments is what enhance the light moments, and it's one whole picture that's beautiful. Very hard when you're inside the story to be able to see it. But I can tell you in my own life, there have been very difficult times in my life, and at the time, it was devastating. At the time, I broke down and cried my eyes out. Didn't know how I'd pull through it. Now I look back at it, and I bless God for those moments. Those moments were transition for me. Those moments opened up things in my life that were incredible, and that maybe it was the seed. Imagine if you were a seed, and you're about to grow. What would you experience? Your life falling apart. Because that's what a seed goes through before it starts to blossom into a tree. It first falls apart. It starts to decay. It's dark. It's dreary. That's when the greatest growth is happening. In the winter, when it's cold, and when it's wet, and when it's dark, and when it's cloudy, and you're falling apart, right? And you're in pain, and you're blessing God, saying, blessed are you who's a true judge, because I just see things falling apart. Well, it's at those times that you got to really stick in there, because you're about to blossom. And afterwards, you look back and you say, wow, that wasn't falling apart. That was actually falling together on a whole new level. And so, that's the Jewish attitude. That's the way we look at the world. Those are the lenses that we look at the world with. That there is judgment, and there is law, and there's order, and there are consequences. And the judge is judging, not just to get on anybody's nerves, but a judgment has to be made in terms of how to put things back into order. How to reconnect me to where I've got to be going. It's difficult, very difficult at times. And so, judgment and the knowledge of judgment gives me the confidence that what's happening has meaning, and I want to turn it around and I want to grow with it. Judgment also empowers me. You know, it's like a child who is never judged by their parents. I have met people like this, and they are not very strong people, because they never grew up feeling that what they do makes a difference. Judaism tells us what you do really makes a difference. For good and for bad. But unless I believe that what I do really makes a difference for bad, I can't know that what I do really makes a difference for good. It goes hand in hand, you know? I can't climb if I'm not able to fall. I can't fall if I'm not able to climb. Can't have a right without a left or a left without a right. And therefore, knowing Hashem as Elohim, as a judge, seeing the world through the eyes of judgment, seeing that there is judgment in the world, there is justice in the world, there are laws, there is order, there is out of bounds, violations, consequences, I can get what I deserve, good things, bad things. When a person sees things that way, it's very empowering. Extremely, extremely empowering. What I do makes a difference. I don't want freebies. I want to know that what I'm doing and what I'm getting is what I've earned, because I've worked hard and I got the results because I worked hard, and this is what I've earned. It's a great feeling. You know, when I was a kid, I didn't want my parents to buy me things. I always wanted to be able to work, and I took jobs, and there was no greater feeling than when I went and bought myself a stereo that I worked for and I earned, and I had that money, and it was very empowering to be able to do that. Now sometimes it's hard. You don't have the money. My son says to me, Abba, I've got to buy a gift for my friend. It's his 6th birthday. Right? I said, well, that's terrific. Why don't you go out and buy him a gift? Well, what do you mean? I said, well, you've got some money. Oh, yeah. He was really excited about that. Yeah, I've got some money. I said, well, go see how much money you have. So he opened up, you know, his little bank over there. And there he had lots of money, these little things that I knew were really agurot, right? And he started looking. He said, well, look, Abba, I didn't realize, look how much money I have. He doesn't realize that it amounts to one shekel. Right? In his mind, wow, he starts pulling it together. Now, I know that he doesn't have enough money to buy a gift, so that's okay, but I want to give him the opportunity to feel that he's a contributor. And so, we went to the store, bought a gift, right? I said, I'll go in half with you, or I'll put in also, right? And he put up his money, and the joy in his pocket when he pulled out his little agarot, he's counting to make sure he's got them all in his hands, and he reaches up to the counter, you know, and then he puts his money on the counter, you know, and the joy in his face that he did this, you know, and that he contributed was terrific. And then I reached up for the counter also, and I gave my money too. You know, I felt terrific too that I was able to earn and I was able to do for my children too. To know that God is a judge is empowering. It's empowering if a person understands that that's really what it's all about. That's all God really, so to speak, wants from us. To be creators also. You also take charge. You also build this world. And so it's very, very empowering. The person who embodied in his life a consciousness of justice, an awareness of God as a judge, was Isaac. And God is referred to as Pachad Yitzchak, the fearful one of Yitzchak. The fearful one of Yitzchak. Now what does that mean about Yitzchak? Well, people have a wrong understanding of Yitzchak. They think that Yitzchak was maybe this wimpy kind of weak guy who was always afraid of God and always afraid of God. It's not at all true. In fact, the Zohar says that people ran away from Yitzchak. They were so frightened of the man. He was such a powerful man, right? That people were literally frightened of him. Well, but I thought he's afraid of God. Don't you understand? When a person has an understanding of who's the judge, it empowers them not to be afraid of people. Not to be afraid of choices. Not to be afraid of life situations, because they have an understanding that there is a judge. And this person's not the judge. And so it's important to understand that in Judaism, when we talk about fear of God, the idea wasn't to make you into this wimpy, weak, you know, lack of confidence person. It was just the opposite. Just the opposite. In fact, it says in the Torah that the midwives in Egypt had Yirat Hashem. They had the fear of God. Why? It's that fear of God that gave them the courage to stand up to Paro. Because King Paro said, I want you to say whoops a couple of times. In fact, every time you see a baby Jewish boy being born, just say whoops and drop the baby. Right? And they wouldn't do it. And they took a risk. A big risk that King Paro is going to knock their head off. But it says they had Yirat Hashem. Right? Therefore, they're not afraid of any human being. Right? They're not afraid of any human being. It's empowering. Okay? If a person's Yirat Hashem, if a person's, so to speak, fear or reverence of God diminishes their life vitality and courage, then that's not fear of God. That's fear of life. Because in Judaism, true fear of God is empowering. And the people who feared God were powerful people in this world who built and understood that what they do is going to really make a difference. This is what Yitzchak was all about. Now we have a very fascinating idea in the Kabbalah. The Kabbalah says that a person's behavior can weaken God. Now there are other verses that say just the opposite. What could you do to affect God? Right? And it's a paradox. But it's important to understand something. What we've been talking all along is that your consciousness of these qualities is what channels these qualities into your world. Whether these qualities are real or not doesn't in any way determine that they'll be in your world. Judaism says God is a judge and there is justice. Will you see that in your world? Maybe not. Well, what will determine whether I'll see that in my world? whether I'm going to allow that in my world. Because if I have a consciousness of justice, and that consciousness is embodied through action, because I live with a sense of justice, I live with a sense of borders, I am cautious not to violate borders, I live with a sense of accountability, responsibility, then I create that kind of world. And that's the world I'll see. I will see more and more a world of justice. I will see more and more God as Elohim in my life. Right? And that's a very exciting experience. That's what Judaism claims. So what does it mean that one weakens God? How does a person weaken God? They don't really weaken God. Not in reality. But in their world, as they see the world, right? Then that doesn't come through. And one does not see that aspect of divine quality being manifest. That's how Torah explains it. Okay? Now let's look at Chesed. What is Chesed? Gvura is looking at the world with an awareness of justice. And the more awareness I have of justice, and the more I embody that, and I am also just in my life, and I live with that awareness of justice, the more my world reflects that justice, and the more God as Elohim comes into my world. That's how Kabbalah describes it. Now, what is Chesed? It's the opposite. Chesed is kindness. Chesed is kindness. I put on the glasses of kindness, and I see kindness in the world. Right? Now, if you don't see kindness in the world, then don't be surprised that in your life you won't have any kindness. The fact that people are being kind to you, but you don't happen to see it, well, so you'll live in a very unkind world. Once again, your world and reality don't necessarily match. What Judaism is claiming it's going to help us do is make our world a clear vessel to allow true reality to come through. And it's based on my acknowledgement of reality that will allow my world to let that in. Remember I shared with you the Hasidic story. A little boy asked his father, "Where is God?" And he said, "Wherever you will let God in." So too, all these qualities are determined by whether I allow these qualities into my life and into the world, which is through my awareness and through my behavior. So chesed, kindness, is a quality. When I put my hand in my pocket and I take out a buck and I hand it to a man, that wasn't simply a motor skill. That was an act which embodies the quality of kindness. And I feel that there's something eternally meaningful in what I did. And what I did isn't just going to affect this man, but I just drew that light. I just drew that awareness in the world, and there's more kindness in the world today because I did that act. Okay? Because I did that act. And so, but the meaning of kindness, which is what I talked about yesterday a little bit, what is really kindness all about? Kindness is I do something I don't have to do. Right? If I had to do it, that would be justice. There are certain things I do because I have to do. I dent your car, I pay you, you know, and you say to the guy, "Well, you know, you should thank me for being so kind." That's not being kind, that's being accountable. That's an act which embodies justice. You've shown and you've acknowledged that justice must be expressed in the world. I broke it, I fix it. Fine. That's terrific. Right? But kindness is doing something for somebody that you don't have to do. It's really a very ridiculous thing, unless you're aware of this quality, that there's something very real and something very meaningful about doing things for people that you don't have to do. I don't have to invite you to my home for Shabbat. Why should I? What do I owe you? But I invite people to my home for Shabbat. I don't expect you to invite me back either. Right? It's a weird kind of quality. In other words, kindness is a complete gift. When I get a gift, right? When I get a gift, it means it was gratuitous. You didn't have to do this. You didn't owe me anything. Right? But you did it. Alright? When I pay my bills, I don't expect to get a thank you note saying, "Thankful for your very kind gift." Right? But if I don't pay my bills, I do expect to get a letter saying, we expect to cut off your electricity within the next 24 hours if you don't pay up. I understand that. I have to be accountable, right? So a gift means I do something completely unwarranted. A gift means I give you something that you didn't earn. If you earned it, then I owe it to you. You didn't earn this, I gave you a gift, right? And it's completely gratuitous, all right? That's really an amazing thing. Because when I look at the world through the eyes of chesed, then what I realize is really everything's a gift. Everything's a gift. Why? Because nothing had to be. I don't have to be, and you don't have to be. This world doesn't have to be. And therefore, that means it is an act of kindness. And that's what it says in Tehillim. The world was built out of kindness. What does it mean the world was built out of kindness? What, there wasn't a world? I mean, how can you say God said, oh, you know, I'll be nice to the world, I'll create it. You can't be nice to a world that doesn't exist yet, right? So how can creation be an act of kindness? An act of kindness is I give you a gift, but there isn't anybody there to give a gift to, right? But when you understand the essence of kindness, what the essence of kindness means is doing an act which is completely gratuitous, which is unnecessary, not obligatory, unwarranted. I just want to do it. And I did it. And that's how the Jewish people look at the world. As something that doesn't have to be. And then when you look at it that way, you're overwhelmed with an incredible sense of gratitude. Because you realize it's all a gift. And then you realize something else. You realize that even justice is a gift. Because even justice doesn't have to be. And so, I'm working really hard. I put in my time. And at the end of the day, I earn my keep. And I'm thankful for God. For what gift? The ability to earn my keep. Because even the ability to earn my keep doesn't have to be. That's why, according to Judaism, judgment and justice itself was born out of kindness. Rules and regulations themselves don't have to be. They're just a gift. And therefore, even what you get, even when you get what you deserve, itself is a terrific gift. To get what I deserve is such a terrific gift, because that doesn't have to be either. Now that's a remarkable realization when you look at the world and realize nothing here has to be. And then you look and you say, wow, and it is. It was like one scientist said, the most incomprehensible thing about the world is that it's comprehensible. I mean, it's completely incomprehensible that it's comprehensible. And so too, looking at the world in the eyes of chesed means I see absolutely everything is a gift. Even everything I deserve is a gift. Who says I should deserve anything? Who said I should get the pleasure of earning things? Wow. And therefore, who was the person who embodied the attribute of kindness? It's almost to say that this person is the first person who brought this aspect of God into the world. And that person was Abraham. Abraham is the person who embodies kindness. Now, why did he become such a kind man? What inspired him to be a kind man? I mean, the stories we know about Abraham is he had this tent, and yet it had no walls. Why did he have a tent without any walls? Because he wanted to have maximal visibility, to be able to see any stranger 360 degrees. So then he sees a stranger, he runs out, says, please come into my house, please let me give you something to eat, please let me give you, I mean, I don't even know you, buddy, what's the deal? What are you after? What do you want from me? That's not kindness, right? If I bring you in my house, and I'm asking you over my house for Shabbos, because really what I want to do is get you to buy my new bicycle. Well, that wasn't kindness. That's just salesmanship. Kindness means I don't expect anything in return, and I'm just doing it, and I don't have to do it But I'll do it, and I do it for strangers. I mean, is that amazing? I'm going to reach into my pocket some. When we see the world through the eyes of chesed, we discover God as El. And what does that mean? It says in the Torah that Avram planted an eshel in Beersheba and called upon God as El Elyon. What did Avram do? What is an eshel? An eshel stands for three things. Achila, shtia, velina. Achila means eating. Shtia means drinking. And lina means sleeping. Okay? Lina means sleeping. Now what does that mean? What does that mean? Avram was the epitome of kindness. The epitome of kindness. What brought him to it? He was the first person who looked at the world and said, this world doesn't have to be. Well, how did other people look at the world? Other people looked at the world and said, this world has always been. It has to be. It wasn't created. It always existed. And all these different forces are gods. They have to be. And they're this compulsive force. They have to be. And that's what an idolater is. An idolater looks at all the various forces in the universe, believes they're gods, they always were, they always will be. There was always this chaos and conflict between these gods, right? And they have to be. Avram looks at all the forces of nature and says, none of this had to be. And that's a genius, right? How did he come to that? He just looked at the world and said, this world wasn't always, and didn't have to be, and doesn't always have to continue to exist. And therefore he said, well then, the best way to describe this world is a gift. It must be a complete gift. Idolaters, they don't know how to be kind. Right? And it's important to understand that idolaters aren't simply people who bow down to trees and birds and bees and, oh well, you know, they just have a different philosophy than me. No, it was much more serious than that. An idolater is a completely unethical person. Right? He believes what you do is nature. And nature made me do it. And if that's my nature, that's what must be. Because that's what has to be. Therefore, I'm a primitive, I'm a barbaric, I feel like killing you, I feel like taking your property. Well, that's what erupts in me. I'm a victim of these forces in the universe, compulsive forces. It just has to be. That's the way it is. Idolaters weren't nice people. You know, the epitome or the antithesis of Abraham was a place called Sodom. Have you heard of Sodom? Right? Well, in Sodom there was a law. It's illegal to do kindness. It was illegal to do kindness. That's why when these angels, so to speak, as human beings, strangers, got into Sodom, Lot, the nephew of Avram, sees them and brings them into the house, he knew he was breaking the law. And when they found out that Lot, who himself was a judge in this city, right, has broken such a cardinal rule, having guests in his house, strangers, they wanted to lynch him. It was illegal to be kind. Why is it illegal? It has to do with your whole world philosophy. You know, kindness is ridiculous. Right? Everything has to have a reason. Everything has to be a function of the forces of nature. And you just don't do something gratuitous. You just don't do that. But since Avram looked at the world and realized that it was gratuitous, he realized that the foundation of the world is kindness. Right? And therefore, to really be in sync with the world, I also want to be kind. I should also be doing for people things that I don't have to be doing, but I do it. And that was the greatness of Avraham. And so, Avraham had the consciousness of kindness. He embodied it in action. And he drew kindness in the world. And he revealed in the world God as the God of kindness. The God who creates the world gratuitously. And creates justice gratuitously. And that really the world is an act of goodness. Complete act of goodness. And that even the judgment is goodness. Even the judgment is goodness. That's an amazing level of awareness that he had. And so that's what excited him to do what he did. And the interesting thing about Avraham is that he was the first person to choose to do commandments. Now listen carefully what that means. See, people don't realize that when God said to Abraham, Lech lecha, go for yourself, right, to a land that I will show you, people don't realize that wasn't a commandment. That was advice. God didn't say, go for me. God said, go for you. And if you don't want to, fine. It wasn't a commandment. Abraham, go. I, God, am commanding you. No. Abraham heard this voice, and that's all discussion. What does that mean, to hear a voice? And what did Abraham do? If you look at the verses carefully, it says, God said to Abraham. And then afterwards it says, and Abraham did as God told him. Completely different world. Did God say, or did God tell him to do it? Well, Vayomer is not a commandment. Vayedaber is a commandment. So really, what did Avram do? He's the first person that chose to be commanded. Right? He wanted to be commanded. In other words, Avram embodies kindness. Not only in his relationship to people, but his relationship to God. Because he wanted. Didn't have to do it as a commandment. He wanted it to be a commandment. Right? He wanted it to be a commandment. And Avram, unlike anybody else, nobody taught Avram to believe in God. If you tell me you should believe in God, then my service is an act of judgment. I'm doing what I should be doing. Avram did something really amazing. He did what he shouldn't be doing. Nobody asked him to believe in God. Nobody told him to believe in God. In fact, everybody in the world is telling him to be an idolater. But he is this person who so embodies kindness, so ready to do things he doesn't have to do, right? That he's the one that didn't have to look at the world and start asking questions, but he did. Realize that the world doesn't have to be, and that the theme of life and the foundation of the world is doing things that you don't have to do, but doing them to make people feel good. Fine, I'll do it. Terrific. And that's what he started to do. And then he started to try and teach other people that the world doesn't have to be, and we should be doing things for each other that we don't have to be doing. We should be kind to each other. He got in big trouble. He didn't have to get in trouble. No, he told him to get in trouble. But his whole life was kindness. And therefore, there's really two kinds of religious experiences that Abraham and Isaac were really the channels for into the world. Right? And that is an orientation towards kindness, and that's an orientation towards justice. You see, when a person follows Torah, let's say, out of kindness, it means what motivates them to do what they do is an appreciation, a recognition for good. And that's why they do it. I say, look at what I have in my life. Look at all the gifts that I have in my life. What can I do? You know, how can I show my appreciation? How can I behave in kind? And that's what inspires them on a spiritual path. Another person is motivated by, look at all I have, I might lose this. If I abuse this, if I break the borders and the boundaries that this gift has been given, then I could lose this, and I'm afraid of losing this, so therefore I want to do the right thing. They're two completely different motivations, right? One is just recognition of the goodness and being inspired to reflect in kind. Another is, hey, I could lose this. I could really lose this. One inspires me to do more good. One inspires me to restrain myself from doing anything bad. Okay? And the Midrash says something really amazing. There's a verse in Psalms that says, I am a stranger on earth. The commentaries tell us that this is God speaking, that God is a stranger on earth. But who, so to speak, turned that around? It was people like Abram and Sarah. It was people like Isaac and Rivka. It was people like Jacob, Rachel and Leah. What does it mean to be a stranger? It means nobody recognizes you. And therefore you don't feel at home, right? You're a wanderer. And therefore, if we don't recognize God in the world, then we don't see God in the world. God, in fact, isn't in the world that we live in, right? And God is a stranger. Imagine you don't recognize your father. Imagine you don't recognize your mother. They walk right in front of you and you don't recognize them. So in your world, you don't have a mother, right? This is just a stranger, right? And she's probably in a lot of pain because you don't recognize her as your mother. And that's really painful. So in order for her to be a mother in your world, you've got to recognize, acknowledge that she's your mother, and you behave in a way which is, you know, in concert with that consciousness. Therefore, the Torah says that these great spiritual masters, Abram and Sarah and Isaac and Rivka and Rachel and Leah and Jacob, they are the ones that brought God into the world. Because they were the first people that recognized these basic qualities, embodied them in their lives. And what's referred to in Midrashic literature is the divine presence is an exile. What does it mean the divine presence is an exile? It means that, so to speak, God is walking around the world like a stranger. Right? Nobody recognizes the king as a king. And therefore, people live in a world without a king. People live in a world without a father, without a mother. Because they don't recognize them. They don't recognize them. This is being metaphorical, of course. So too over here. All this is connected to everything that we've been teaching here, a basic principle in Judaism. The verse goes like this. God says to the Jewish people, "You are my witnesses, and I am God. Edei atem. You are my witnesses, and I am God." So the Midrash, the oral tradition, says something which is really outrageous. It says, "You are my witnesses, and I am God. But if you are not my witnesses, I am no God. I am no God." What does that mean? What does that mean? There's a basic teaching in Judaism that says there's no such thing as a king without a kingdom. Now, if the kingdom doesn't recognize the king, then essentially the king is not amongst them. Right? Now, he could be running around saying, "Hey, I'm the king," but if nobody recognizes him as the king, so do you know who that guy is? No. Why is he running around with that crown? What is it, Purim? I don't know who the guy is. Well, so then, effectively, you don't live in a kingdom. Right? All these attributes we're talking about is in our hands, through our minds and through our behavior, to embody this awareness is what enables this truth to penetrate in our world. And then the world becomes a world of life, of synergy, of justice and kindness and truth. And I, and each and every one of us, have a role in whether we're going to channel and allow reality to break through into our world. If we don't, when we have basically chosen the world we'd like to live in, whether it's reality or not, doesn't really make a difference. Like one psychiatrist once said, you know, if a person comes to you and says, there's somebody chasing after me every day. I mean, everywhere I look. I mean, what? So you don't say to him, "No, there isn't. You're just paranoid." Right? Because essentially, that's the world he lives in. So you got to deal with it. And telling him that he's paranoid and that he's out of touch with reality doesn't really help. You have to get him to deal with this. All right? So there's the world you live in, and then there's reality. Whether your world is letting the essence of reality in based on what you believe what you're looking to see, how you interpret things, and all that, of course, determines how you're going to behave. If you think it's a dog-eat-dog world, well, then don't be surprised that everywhere you look, you see people barking at you. That's what you're looking for. That's what you're going to see. People are even going to relate to you that way. You are my witnesses. I am God. If a person wants to not believe in God, that's their choice, and they'll live in a godless world. And if that's the world you want to live in, then that's the world you're going to live in. Right? Judaism says there is a God. But you know what? That's essentially immaterial to you. Because unless you live a lifestyle, which itself becomes a vehicle to allow the light, the electricity, the energy of a God into your world, then your world is godless. It's like the Midrash says, a haughty person, an egotistical person, this world is not big enough for the both of us. Right? And therefore God leaves that egotistical person's world. Because that person says, there's just me. And if the person believes it's just me, well then that's what you get. You get a world which is just you. You know, Rav Kook, great teacher, once said, the greatest punishment of egotism is egotism. Mm-hmm. And if that's what you want, then that's what you'll get. And that's the world you'll live in. Why will it be painful? Because my soul knows that this isn't the true world. My soul knows that this world is a world that is clouding out such beautiful light that could come into my world. I'm always amazed when I'm in a plane, it's a dark, dreary day in New York or wherever I'm flying off out of, and like it just seems so sad, and all of a sudden, wow! The light is so brilliant. And you realize, hey, you know, the light is always shining. It just depends whether you put up clouds. That's what Judaism is actually saying. We can look at the world, these are our glasses, each one of these quality are glasses. They're designer glasses. If I want Elizabeth Arden on the bottom corner of my glasses, then I'll see Liz all over the place. If I want Pierre Cardone on this side of my glasses, I'll see Pierre all over the place. If I'm wearing blue glasses, I'll let the blue in, right? But nothing else. If I'm wearing yellow glasses, then the world is yellow. Every single one of these attributes are glasses which determine the world I see and the life I live. And Judaism claims that this is what it's going to accomplish for us. It's going to let us see what's really there. Torah is referred to as light. Torah or. Why is it light? Because it's going to let me see what's really there. It's going to teach me what to believe and how to act, which will allow me to really see what's there. And it claims that the more I do that, it's going to let me see what's there. Whether I believe that or not is my choice. I can choose to believe that. I can choose not to believe that. And you got to choose to believe in the life you're going to live. Because it's your life. But that's what its claim is. Right? That's what its claim is. So, what essentially Judaism is describing, and what actually is very much reflected in these days right now between Pesach and Shavuos, is every night we count a number as we go towards the receiving of the Torah. After we count that number, there's a little text that we say after it. A little text that we say after it. Which says, you know, may it be in the merit of this counting that I fix the attribute of Netzach of Malchut. See, each one of these qualities have every other one reflected within it to its own relativity. So there would be Chesed of Malchut, there would be Netzach of Malchut. And when you look at it, and it says, may I, through this counting, fix the damage I have caused to this attribute. How could I cause a damage to this attribute? It's simple. If I don't act kind, then I don't acknowledge the attribute of kindness. I do not embody it. I do not channel it into the world. And therefore, essentially, it's as if I have damaged that quality in this world. Right? If I do not acknowledge justice, and therefore I am not accountable, I do not pay my dues, right? I do not accept consequences, then essentially what I'm doing is I'm blocking out of this world the attribute of justice, And therefore, I'm damaging the world to the extent that the world has cut off the expression of justice in the world. This is the power Judaism says each and every one of us has. We're created in the image of God. What does it mean? Being created in the image of God means that my behavior can either portray God in the world, and people will have a heightened awareness of God in the world, or my behavior could betray God, and people will feel there is no God in this world, because look at the way this person acted. Remember, I think I once shared with you, you can have a person whose parents say, I don't believe in God, there is no such thing as God, and the child is a devout, incredible believer in God. And the parents cannot figure out where they went wrong. You can have another parent's really religious, you know, kid went to yeshiva, high school, whatever. The parents made sure that the kid said Shema every single day, and the kid doesn't believe in God. And the parents don't understand, where did I go wrong? Right? Well, look, there's lots of ways. There's lots of ways of understanding where a person went wrong. But one way is that a person can say with their mouth, I don't believe, but their actions portrayed God to their children because they were kind, because they were just, because they were truthful, because they accepted organization, and they looked for synchronization, and they looked to see how they fall in line, because they wanted to get in line in the troops of life. And therefore they said they don't believe in God, but okay, that's what they said, but their entire life embodied God and channeled consciousness of God into their home. And if that's what they said, so maybe they didn't like the word God, you know. Some people don't relate to the word. Okay, fine, I don't relate to the word either. And then you can have people who say to the kids, you know, there's a God, you know, say the Shema, God is one. Did you make your bracha? Did you make your bracha? Did you bless Hashem for that apple? Right? But for some crazy reason, kid doesn't believe in God. And why? Well, maybe you said you believe in God, but you didn't act with kindness. You did not act with justice. You did not embody truth. You never showed any concern for being part of a community. You never ever showed that you were strategically placed within the troops of a greater power, and that we all have to get in line and do our part in this great host and cast. You didn't show that with your actions. You didn't embody that. You didn't channel that. So you created for your child a godless world, and you confused them because you kept saying, there's a God, and yet you kept acting, there is no God. So, these are the seven lenses, levels of consciousness, which we cannot just simply meditate on, we must embody with our actions, and through it, we channel the divine energy, whatever word we use, into the world. Tomorrow, what I hope to finish off with you is the last three sphirot. Wisdom, understanding, and will.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.